Welcome to Earth2.net, the show, episode 1146.
As someday it may happen that a victim must be found, I've got a little list, I've got a little list.
He's got him on the list, he's got him on the list, and they're gonna be missed.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another Flickchart Forum here on Earth2.net. I am Ian Wilson, and once again we're looking at lists. Lists that can be grouped by themes, or characters, or directors. What's easiest? Directors. What are we doing? Directors. And in this instance, it is Samuel. And whilst I had a list of prepared Samuels to go off of, I then noted that by saying it's a director, it very much limits my scope. So
I'll just rip the band-aid off. It's going already.
What is happening right now?
Oh, lovely. My guests are introducing themselves before I even get there. But hell, one take. I'm not doing this again. We're doing Sam Raimi. You've heard Des Reddick and Dave Probert.
Hello.
Hello.
People that I both formerly rather liked. Now, Sam Raimi is best known as a director of horror. That being said, he has diversified slightly, which I found out a great deal when doing the homework for this segment.
I would say he made his name in horror. But he's definitely become a more mainstream filmmaker.
I think that is fair to say. But obviously, he cut his teeth on the groundbreaking low-budget horror. It ended up being a trilogy. And then some, Evil Dead.
Yeah, a franchise, a honest-to-God franchise.
A franchise. Now, if my research is correct, Mr. Reddick, Mr. Doomsday, give you your proper title.
Thank you, sir.
You did the Evil Dead films for episode 800 of Dread Media.
Yes, that sounds right.
With Tom DJ.
Yeah.
And then you also did a roadkill review of Drag Me to Hell when it came out as well.
Right, oh shit, yeah. Wait, yeah, way back when.
Episode 93.
Wow, look at you with the research.
Well, I listened back to it earlier today.
Oh, dear.
with your good chum, Daryl.
Right.
And I'd say that I hope enough time has not passed, but he's no longer your good chum, Daryl.
yeah, I mean, that's true, but we don't have to get into that.
Lovely stuff. But insofar as that is how he came to prominence, and that is kind of the stuff that you cover, Des, what was your first kind of encounter with Sam Raimi and his ilk?
Oh, man. Like, what was the first Sam Raimi movie I ever saw? It had to be Evil Dead. I would have seen it at, like, 5 years old, probably. I'm not even kidding. I owned the VHS by 9 or 10.
Right.
Yeah, I owned the VHS of it. It's one of the... I owned very few VHSs. Very few. I had, like, E.T. I had Evil Dead. I had the Godfather trilogy. And then I had, I think, the remastered Star Wars VHS trilogy as well. I think that's right. And then I had a couple random, I had like fucking Microwave Massacre or something, but that was in a misguided attempt at collecting, because I'm like, surely if I have this beat up VHS of Microwave Massacre from 1989, it will be worth thousands of dollars.
Wow. Yes.
No, it was, it, yeah, I lost money on shipping when I sold that one. Jesus Christ.
I think we're getting a bit of insight into how you became you.
I was going to say, we had very different childhoods.
But yeah, I mean, I saw Evil Dead quite young. But I think also, like, I think I didn't see Evil Dead 2 until I was like 12. So it was quite a gulf. And for me, that was shocking, you know, like,
right.
I was like, oh, like, cause I was watching, I'm like, oh, this is basically that same movie.
Yes.
I'm like, the fucking, it's, I don't even think we had the words for remake back then, right? Like, I'm like, this is the same movie as Evil Dead. And then it changed, and I was like, oh, this is a very different movie than Evil Dead.
Well, more on that later.
Right, right. We'll get there. But yeah, I mean, I've just sort of been like a pocket Sam Raimi fanboy ever since. I was purely delighted when it was announced that he was directing the Spider-Man movies.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I would say I followed his career, but there's certainly movies that we're going to talk about today that I have watched for the first time for this specific podcast.
Oh, yes.
So, I'm not going to say I'm the biggest fan ever. Although, I will say, I'm not trying to take over the podcast here. Am I going to get credit for coming up with the idea for this episode, Ian? I believe it was my suggestion, was it not?
It may well be.
Thank you very much.
I don't care. as long as the content's there. You know. It's like, you may have nominated, I pick it, and then, you know, get it organized and, you know, dedicate periods of my life for the homework and everything.
I hear that. So, I hear that. Yeah.
It's almost like you've had a weekly podcast for 15 years.
Almost. Almost. Yeah. Almost for 862 weeks running.
Dave, what's about you? And this is your first foray onto the Flick Chart Forum.
It is indeed.
So welcome.
Lovely to be here.
I wish I'd worked with you sooner.
Yeah.
Now, what's your kind of first memories of Sam Raimi and his filmography?
It was probably Army of Darkness. I mean, I think I've like been well documented in various places saying that as a kid I was never really a horror person. I was always kind of timid with horror.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I scared easily. And I think I just ended up seeing Army of Darkness on like a late night TV showing after like a shift, after a pub shift, I think it was. And really enjoyed it. So I've actually ended up seeing all the Evil Deads, but I saw them in reverse order.
Okay.
Which may well affect how I feel about
yeah, that's definitely the worst way to watch that, those three movies. It's the worst way to watch those three movies.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have some interesting rankings, I think.
Oh, that's what I like to hear.
And then, I think the next movie I definitely remember seeing for would be probably Darkman.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I'd heard of before sort of seeing it. And again, I think it was on television one night.
I saw Darkman in the theater.
Oh, nice.
I even own the DVDs for the sequels.
Oh, wow.
I've seen a couple of the sequels.
They're not good.
Yeah, Arnold Vosloo is no Liam Neeson.
No. Darkman fucking rules. The Darkman sequels do not exist.
No.
We don't talk about Die Dark Man Die.
I've never heard anyone talk about Die Dark Man Die.
Great title, to be fair. Great title.
Yeah.
Of course, in German, it's The Dark Man.
The Dark Man. The. Oh. If he speaks German, he can't be that bad.
So, yeah. And then I think likewise after that, so it's kind of like being familiar with him for like the stuff he did with Spider-Man. And, yeah, so he's kind of more modern day sort of overt. But, yeah, a lot of these on the list, I probably have watched for the first time for this as well, because they aren't films I think I would normally have gravitated towards.
Mm.
And in some cases, I'm pleased to have watched them, but in other cases, maybe not so much. I guess we'll find out.
I have a feeling this is a common theme between all of us, because for my part, because I'm so much younger than both of you.
Here we go.
The knives come
my,
out.
Look,
if my knee didn't hurt so bad, I'd come over there and kick your ass.
Yeah. You're 8 time zones away, I fear nothing.
You're safe.
Yeah. I mean, basically, my kind of first real introduction to Raimi was the Spider-Man trilogy.
Okay.
And Also, when I was in Banff, I've said this on a previous Flick Chart forum, you were on, Des. I saw The Quick and the Dead for the first time on the TBS Superstation.
Ah, right.
And very much enjoyed it, keeping my powder dry. And so I got the feeling as to what a Sam Raimi film was. In time, I got to see the Evil Dead trilogy. And we did Darkman for Pulp Diction as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which was a nonsense of a recording because the broadband in my previous accommodation was, shall we say, patchy. So whichever Christmas episode that was, you can hear both the bit when I am desperately trying to participate in that episode as the person doing the synopsis, and then being edited out purposefully in a Garfield, not Garfield kind of way.
Yeah. Yikes.
So, for those of you who haven't listened to a Flipchart forum before, what is going to happen is the three of us are going to go through our lists of Sam Raimi films. Depending on the placement of the film, they will be awarded points, and I will tally up the points in the background to compose a master list of what we consider between the three of us to be the best and indeed the worst Sam Raimi films, whilst also just saying basically what our worst to best lists are, and we are going to go from worst to best. Now, there are 15 films that we're going to talk about, and some of you have of course, be saying, hang on, I think you'll find there are 16 films. To which I will simply respond, go outside. yes.
Touch grass.
That's exactly. I am aware that he has directed 16 films. However, the amateur film It's Murder doesn't count.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically. So we're going to start.
I've never seen it.
No, that would be another reason why not to rank it. So we're going to start from 1981's The Evil Dead and go from there. And therefore, on that basis, there are 15 films. So Dave, on the basis that it's his first time on the Flick Chart Forum, we're going to start with him. And then we're going to go oldest to youngest. So it'll be Des next, then me. Okay. Right, so.
Again.
That's kind of my thing.
Comes across so nice, but
I'm not. I'm a terrible human being. So, Dave, if you'd like to kick us off, and what is at the very bottom of your list of Sam Raimi films?
Okay, well, I'd like to preface my entire list by saying that obviously there, I don't think that any of these films 1,000% could be called completely bad. So I haven't, you know, I've had to kind of apply a bit of a personal taste approach to a lot of this.
Fair.
So I've kind of factored in what do I go back to, what did I enjoy and stuff. But there is a definite bottom of the list that I wasn't a fan of, and that's Oz the Great and Powerful.
Right.
Okay.
So Oz the Great and Powerful from 2013. And again, for people who haven't heard this before, we will stop and talk about an individual film once all three of us have put it on our lists. So, given Des's response, I don't think it's going to be an immediate thing.
No, it's
not. Oz the Great and the Powerful is at the bottom of Dave's list. Des, what is at the bottom of yours?
Okay, so I have my own little preface, and it's very similar to Dave's. However, it is slightly different. So, the preface for me is that we're talking about Sam Raimi. So, with the exception of the film I'm about to mention, there are no bad films.
Okay.
Even the film I'm about to mention is still what I would consider competent, but in no way can I say I enjoyed Crime Wave.
Okay, right. That is Crime Wave from 1985, the film that came between The Evil Dead and The Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
So if we're going to go preface crazy,
I just thought a rationale would be nice.
No, that's fair. I would just say that I don't think any of Sam Raimi's films are outright terrible. That being said, the film I definitely will not watch again, because I've watched it enough, specifically for podcast purposes. I have really no need to really watch it again, is Spider-Man 3.
Huh. Wow, really, eh?
Yeah, eh?
Interesting.
So,
damn it.
Who's their own worst stereotype, me or Dez?
I know.
Okay, so with that set out, all three of those films have scored 0 points by being at the bottom of our list. However, because they are further up the list of everyone else, they will at least be getting some points. So that is interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And therefore, we continue on upwards. And Dave, number 14 on your list.
Number 14 on my list is Crime Wave.
Righto. Strike two for Crime Wave. Dez, 14 for you.
14th for me is The Gift.
Okay, The Gift from 2000. The Southern Gothic story thing. More on that later. And 14 for me is a film that hasn't been brought up as of yet, and that is For the Love of the Game.
Huh.
So there we go.
This is wild. This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun to see the final list. Crazy.
This is what I love about this segment. Dave, 13 for you, please.
13 for me is Spider-Man 3.
Righty ho. Strike two for Spider-Man 3. Dez, 13, please.
My 13th film is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Gosh, we're not... Well, I was about to say we're not getting to an actual review anytime soon. Apart from the fact that my number 13 choice is Crime Wave.
Aha, there it is. Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so long it can last, but I will say, because it's highest on my list, I was charmed by just how off the wall it was. I mean, it is clearly the work of someone who's still finding their feet as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And interestingly also, scripted by the Coen brothers.
That's right, yeah.
So, a very interesting niche film, which Sam Raimi absolutely despises. And I believe kind of editing and Final Cut got taken away from him, which, again, is not something that would never happen again to him over the course of his career. But it's something I did see for the first time as a result of doing this project. And
same.
I was entertained, but I could see that it wasn't good. So, Dez, it's the very bottom of your list. Give it both barrels.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like, you sort of see it, like, it's an attempt at a live-action, you know, cartoon, right? It's like
yeah.
a live-action Daffy Duck movie or something. Mm. But it, for me, it just misses on every level. It just misses on every, the performances are so crazy. Like I just watching it, it's like, oh my God, like, why? Why? that's what I felt watching this. Again, this was, I jumped in there. This was a first time watch for me for, this. And I was like, wow, now I know why I haven't seen this movie for so long. I know there's other Raimi Coen brother efforts. I can't imagine any of them are proud of this movie. I know that Sam Raimi isn't, but I can't imagine the Coen brothers are either. But I do have to say Bruce Campbell, a slight shining light in this movie. Small, he's hysterical in this tiny little role.
That's almost a given though, isn't it?
It's crazy. He's has the charm. He just brings it.
I mean, it is, but again, it's still very early in his own career as well.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, even back in the day, and he was a producer of this film, because that way he and Raimi would still have some kind of input, that, that allowed them to be on somewhat of a par with the backers of the film, although ultimately they lost out.
The movie's a slog, though. It's a slog.
It's a very strange watch, certainly. Dave, what was your kind of impression of Crime Wave?
Well, it was one of the first films I watched as research for this.
Right. And
we've been preparing for this for a while, so I've actually kind of forgotten. Very little of it actually stuck in my memory when I was composing the list. And then I thought, shall I go back and watch it again? And then I was consumed with a sudden dread in my stomach. And I just went, you know what? No.
It's been a while for me. If I remember correctly, I actually paid to rent this movie.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
I rented it on Amazon. It's very stylized. It's very like, I mean, it does scream early director playing around with, you know, some toys in a sandbox.
Yeah.
But I remember not particularly liking a lot of the characters, the style a bit over the top, the plot didn't really make a whole bunch of sense. Like, you know, I could see he was going for something, but I'm not sure it achieved it, and I'm probably never going to watch it again, so that's why it's kind of like low down on my list.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I didn't pay to rent it specifically, but it did come through my DVD rental subscription. So money was exchanged, ultimately. And I don't have the immediate capacity to rewatch it. And yeah, I've got other films that I need to rewatch ahead of Crime Wave. A lot of other films. So
imagine getting a residuals check for Crime Wave. Fuck.
I mean, I have
someone
to
made money on that.
I have to assume that the star is not living well. Whatever his name is.
Yes. So, paying in your shame check.
Now, in fairness, that's a slightly different thing. Pandy and I have just reviewed Bright for Will Smith Redux.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm a Bright fan. I don't care. I'll say it. I love that movie. I wish there was more of them.
Yeah, all right.
I'm that guy.
Right. Yeah, you, Max Landis. Okay. Anyway, so that's Crime Wave, probably deserving bottom of the list. Dave, number 12 for you, sir.
My number 12 is For Love of the Game.
Righty, hey. Strike two for a baseball movie.
Wah, wah.
Thank you.
Ironically, it's not pitching the perfect game.
Dez, number 12 for you.
Yeah, this is maybe where I make some enemies. My number 12 is A Simple Plan.
Okay. I think I gave away if you've made an enemy out of me. I say that, I've only seen it once.
Saying it's bad.
No, that was a very conscious preface.
Yes.
On your part, yes.
Yes.
For me, number 12 is another go for Oz the Great and Powerful. And Dez has picked A Simple Plan below Oz the Great and Powerful, so we're not talking about Oz the Great and Powerful yet. I'm not bitter. Dave, number 11, please.
My number 11 is Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness.
Righty-ho. Dez, number 11 for you.
My number 11 is Drag Me to Hell.
Okie dokie. And for me, number 11 is the chance to talk about Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Ah.
And I had the kind of thing that was referred to earlier for Crime Wave is, it's been a while, should I rewatch it? And I had it all queued up on Disney Plus, and as the hours counted down, I just basically exclaimed a big meh and didn't bother. So there we go. I don't know, this is one of two Phase 4 films that I've bothered to watch. My days as comic book movie correspondent have well deserted me. And I mean, I thought it was fine, and the things that Raimi did bring to the film, I think, were particularly telling when you saw Strange inhabit an alternate self of himself who was a corpse.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, there's Sam Raimi.
Yeah. There's a little bit of Raimi in that movie, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of Raimi in this film. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
It's lowest on your list, Des.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's better than the first Doctor Strange movie for me, but I don't know. That's about all I can say that's positive about it personally. Well, okay. I mean, I was never really, like, super attracted to Elizabeth Olsen, and then Evil Scarlet Witch kind of did it for me. I don't know what that says okay. about me.
Right.
Probably explains a few things. But, yeah, there's that. But that's just... It's a pretty terrible movie, in my opinion. The whole... like, America Chavez is... she could literally be an Infinity Stone. She's not a character. She's a gimmick. And I'm like, they're not even making this... they're not even trying to make this a legitimate character. It's just like, it's so bland and... I don't know. The zombie Doctor Strange stuff was kind of fun. The, the statues that kind of come to life is kind of fun. And I got to see Rintra in a movie. I don't know if you know who Rintra is. Rintra is that green...
you're
fucking...
definitely asking the wrong person there.
He's that green goat person.
Okay.
Right? That's a classic comic book friend of Doctor Strange. And he popped up in that movie. So that was cool. But it's just such a bland movie. And the whole, the Scarlet Witch thing is like completely overwrought, you know, just like all the stuff with her kids and stuff. It's just like, it didn't feel fully fleshed out to me. It just felt like this is the conflict that we're going to present to make her become a villain. And it just felt like, okay, you know.
They kind of did the villain wanting a version of their family from an alternate dimension better in the first Spider-Verse film.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, this kind of fell flat for me. And then also, people with greater ties to the MCU, like Mike, were more bothered by, they've totally destroyed the Scarlet Witch character.
Yeah.
And I'm like 6 2/3 on that one. It's just like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not invested in Marvel movies enough to, you know, really care that much, but...
I'm definitely not anymore.
Yeah.
If I was to begin with.
I tried really hard, though. I did. I've watched every single one up until recently.
A Phase 4?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's more than I've done.
But also, yeah, like for free, basically, on Disney Plus. But I canceled Disney Plus because they upped the price. So,
right.
So I'm not going to see any more Marvel movies, I guess. Unless, like, I'll go see the X-Men movie. You know what I mean? I'll see it in the theater. But, yeah.
Deadpool 3?
I'll pay to see it in the theater. I'll pay to see an X-Men movie.
Okay, cool. Dave, what about you?
I mean, I actually don't mind this. Yeah, I mean, I think it's got some good set pieces in it. Like, the different alternative Doctor Stranges are kind of fun, and obviously seeing all the kind of different versions. Seeing Patrick Stewart in the X-Men animated series version of the wheelchair.
Right.
For me being a,
Illuminati part was super fun, right? Super fun.
For me being a kid who grew up on the X-Men cartoon in the 90s, seeing him come in with that little bit of music in the background, I mean, that was kind of worth it, to be fair. I think the most interesting things they've been doing with Doctor Strange has been in the What If cartoon series. They've been doing some really good stuff with Doctor Strange in that, which, if you haven't seen it, I'd recommend giving it a look if you get a chance.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. I do still kind of like Marvel movies, but, like, it is a Marvel film, but you kind of know what you're getting, and there's very little kind of Raimi's directorial kind of flair in there.
Yeah.
That you get in some of his other superhero work. So yeah, like, for me, it's fine. It's okay. I probably will watch it again at some point. but it's lower on this list.
Fair enough. So we go into our top tens, and it is Dave to start us off.
Yeah, so my number 10 is The Gift.
Yeah, that's the second nomination of The Gift. Dez.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we can talk about Oz the Great and Powerful now.
Oh, hurrah! So, what makes it so brilliant, Dez?
Okay. Look, so this was another first-time watch, because honestly, I never gave a shit to watch this movie until this came up, right? I'm like, yeah. I guess I'll watch this, you know? And at least I got this. This was on Disney Plus when I had it.
Yes, so, it was. Yeah.
I thought it was trivial and dumb, but I kind of enjoyed it. Like, I don't know. There's lots of, like, innovative stuff with the little, like, the porcelain doll girl I really enjoyed. I don't know. It was just, like... Yeah, what, Finley the monkey, right? Another, like, fun character. Like, it was just, like, odd enough, you know, to sort of, like, pique my interest. And I ended up, like, kind of enjoying it. I don't like James Franco, but he's okay.
You're in safe company now.
Yeah. I mean, he's been good, you know. I would say he's good in the Spider-Man movies. I'd say he's great in Spring Breakers, but he's not great in this movie. I just thought it was a really sort of innovative, cool little, like, basically just the animated stuff for me. I was like, oh, this is so, like, creative and fun. So that's basically my impression of the movie. Will I watch it again? Probably not.
Okie dokie. Dave, it is rock bottom of your list.
Yes. Well, I would preface this by saying I don't think this is Sam Raimi's fault, because he does, like, he does give it, like, it looks great. There's, like, kinetic camera movement. These, yeah, like, stuff when you get to Oz is all very colourful and stuff. I just think it's a terrible script.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, given that, and I know this because, Gillian, my partner, is a very big, fan of the Oz books, the original, she's read all the original Oz books. And when there's so many of the original kind of Oz material that hasn't been translated into film, and all of them have female leading characters, and yet we're making a film about Oz, and sort of like, why do we need this prequel when Wicked exists?
Right. It's weird that there's so many prequels.
Yeah.
To the Wizard of Oz, you know? It's weird.
But also just like, I think Oz as written is too unlikable for too much of the film. Like, if he's going to have his kind of, well, using the wrestling terminology, his face turn, and so, like, his realization he's going to be doing the right thing, it just kind of comes way too late in the film and by that point, I already hate him. And like,
yeah, well, I mean, you spend the whole movie like, ugh, this fucking guy, you know?
Yeah. and obviously the script maybe didn't factor in the drag factor of having James Franco play him as well.
Right. Honestly, I think it's a better movie with almost any other acting choice.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact that I suddenly had the realization in like the last third that this is basically a remake of Army of Darkness in Oz. Like, there's even the same scene where he's showing them how to use black powder.
That's right. Jesus.
Yeah, it's Army of Darkness in the Land of Oz.
I never picked up on that. Oh my god.
And the thing is, like, if Bruce Campbell had been playing Oz, I'd have watched the shit out of this.
100%.
And it would have been amazing.
100%.
Because Bruce Campbell would have brought something to that. Like, because a lot of the characters Bruce Campbell play are kind of like in the vein of Oz is in the script. Kind of like, I mean, like, Ash in Army of Darkness is very much...
Lovable asshole. Yeah. That's his whole gimmick. Lovable asshole.
Exactly.
And also, what he's wearing in Spider-Man is basically Oz, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So James Franco doesn't bring, for me, the kind of charm you need to be able to get away with playing a lovable asshole.
I think it's because he's an asshole.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's an actual asshole.
Yeah.
It's a film that has no reason to exist, and it doesn't pull off what it's trying to do very well, I don't think. But I don't think that's Raimi's fault. I think he was lumbered with a bad script and some dubious casting choices as well. I feel there are a couple of people who are a bit miscast in it. Mila Kunis, I don't think he's... I like her as an actor. I've seen her in a lot of things and really, really enjoyed her. But I don't think she works in this.
No, probably not.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Rachel Weisz is fantastic.
Yes. Always.
She's really good. I think Michelle Williams is very good. But obviously, sort of like, in the early stages of the film, it's black and white, and I'm having to put up with both James Franco and Zach Braff on my screen at the time. Like, this isn't going well. So, oh yeah, Dream Team! I just wasn't a fan of the story it was telling or some of the performances. That's why it's kind of rock bottom of my list. Over to you, Ian.
I will say that my choice is in the middle. I definitely agree that I think Raimi's flair for visuals is basically what saves the film.
Yeah.
Because it's quite frankly stunning to look at in the way that the original Wizard of Oz was.
And honestly, like the production design of the movie is undeniable to me, right?
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. I mean, and like, honestly, like, it is like Oscar worthy to be, it's a wonderful sight to behold. It just happens to have people in it.
Yeah. And I think that very much comes across with the Michelle Williams character, because I think the visuals best come across when they're in the bubbles floating towards the Munchkin City and everything. Right. But again, the whole circus aspect being shot in black and white or sepia or whatever, again, I think that very much works in the film's favour. It does not help that James Franco is a massive sex pest, but even then, I don't think he's a strong enough leading man for any film, basically. But I think more.
I get it. I don't like him.
I say that in all seriousness.
Even before the sex pest shit, I was like, I don't like this guy. I don't like
him. And it's one thing that Oz is meant to be a charlatan. Because, you know, that's the whole reveal at the end of The Wizard of Oz. It's like he's a con man, pure and simple. So that's a bit, the film is asking you to get on board with a con man, and there's got to be reason for you to like him and for him to get from A to B.
Literally to fucking anybody else. I mean, yes, we said Bruce Campbell, but literally anybody else would have been so much better.
Yeah, because this was...
Zach Braff would have been better as us.
I think Dave might disagree with you.
It's a photo finish.
I'll just imagine that sprint. ducking for the line. Ostensibly, I think you just changed the guy playing the protagonist, and it would probably be a better film with or without the Mila Kunis casting. But I think Mila Kunis has the problem of the fact she has to transform into the Wicked Witch of the West. So, you know, she's kind of on a hiding to nothing. But then again, building on what Dave was saying, it's a very badly underwritten part anyway. Because the love story that is meant to kind of have broken her heart is barely there.
Yeah, barely there.
As Dave said, just not a very good script. But, yeah, ultimately, I think the visuals and the direction kind of save it. But, because this was Raimi's last film for, like, years. Like, 6-7 years before Doctor Strange.
He's not super prolific.
Not anymore.
Yeah, and honestly, he makes weird choices to me. Like, these are the movies that he's directing?
Well, that's the thing, because when I was doing the homework...
He wants to make Oz the Great and Powerful. He wants to make Doctor Strange 2.
When I was doing the homework for this, it's like, wow, Sam Raimi was weirdly prolific in the 90s.
Right, yes, and he was, yeah.
Then he did Spider-Man, and then it's just like, that, oh, and then Doctor Strange.
I mean, to be fair, he was very prolific in television, sort of not so much as a director, but as
he is a prolific producer.
He is.
Tons and tons of titles. He does that a lot.
Yeah, like he was his production company that was behind the Spartacus series in the early 2000s.
Right.
Your beloved Spartacus series.
It's an amazing show.
It's really good.
And also they kind of quite famously produced Hercules, The Legendary Journeys and Xena Warrior Princess.
Mm-hmm.
Did they do SeaQuest?
No, I don't.
I don't think they did. No.
I only ask because Ted Raimi's in it, and you know, chances are,
yeah, yes, because Ted Raimi's
the one. The one time Ted Raimi didn't get nepotism, it was SeaQuest.
Well, it needed addressing.
Did it really? The issue of Ted Raimi's casting in Sequest DSV is just a dangling thing that no one's been talking about in your eyes.
It's my segment. That's
just an issue that no one's had the guts to face up to until now.
We're just speaking the truth, people.
Take that, Ted. Anyway.
Oh, and American Gothic as well in the 90s, which is an amazing show. I love it.
Yeah, right.
So, my number 10 pick is The Gift, so we can talk about that now.
Ah.
For me, so Dave and I have ranked this on a par, and for me, this is a film that basically lives and dies on Cate Blanchett's central performance.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the reverse thing of Oz the Great and Powerful. It's like, because you cast Cate Blanchett as the lead, the film is eons better than it had any right to be. I mean, if you cast James Franco in the lead of The Gift, then it wouldn't work on a number of levels. But, but the fact that you had Cate Blanchett at her pomp leading this kind of spiritual horror film that had a very interesting supporting cast going on.
Yeah.
It's oddly compelling, but at the same time, forgettable's the wrong word, because there are certain things that set it apart, but not just because, like, the first thing Keanu Reeves decides to do after The Matrix is this. I'm just like, huh, that's a strange choice.
Right.
But it's a weird film, to be sure. Dave, again, you put it in the top 10, albeit the lower reaches. What were you thinking?
I do like it a lot. I mean, it's kind of on its place in the list, not because I don't think it's good, but I just think there are other films that are better. So, yeah, I think I really like the kind of creepy sort of gothic vibe. It was kind of quite unsettling to see Keanu Reeves playing such an out-and-out nasty piece of work.
Yeah.
Especially when you know what a nice man he is in real life. He's like, no, don't do that. You're Keanu Reeves.
You're Neo now.
You're a fluffy man. We all know this to be true. But yeah, no, I thought he was good at it. Yeah, obviously, Cate Blanchett is amazing because she's Cate Blanchett. But yeah, no, I think there's a really nice kind of like unsettling tone all the way through. So even in the kind of more even the more mundane scenes feel like there's like a tension there, which I think is a quality he brings to some of the other films on the list as well that aren't necessarily out and out horror films. It's a good mystery with a interesting kind of ending. I generally enjoyed it, but it's just like, yeah, it's lower on the list just because I've enjoyed some other things more. That's all.
Des, this is one up from Crime Wave for you.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's not because it's bad. It's just, for me, it feels like a bog-standard thriller. But, like, yeah, I'll watch Cate Blanchett in anything. She's incredible. But for me, this is, like, the least Sam Raimi movie of all the Sam Raimi movies.
Mm.
It just seems like a real standard 90s thriller to me. And I just didn't feel his stamp on it, personally. That's why it's so low on my list.
Not even with the kind of visions of dead Katie Holmes.
Yeah, I mean, not really.
Okay.
Not really. I mean, that stuff was a dime a dozen in the 90s.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, because that example notwithstanding, I am racking my brains as to what would really suggest the hallmarks of Sam Raimi, and I'm really drawing a blank.
Right.
I mean, the Oldsmobile's in it.
That is true. That is true. And yeah, it's interesting to see Keanu Reeves as the villain, that which you don't tend to see. So, kind of interesting. So, there is that. Again, you know, it's not Crime Wave, so to me, it's still, like, not a bad movie. It's just not a movie I'll ever go back to.
If we were working like a Tron system, it would be like Crime Wave and then everything else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is how the points are looking at the moment, certainly. Yeah. And I would say that we're into his fruitful relationship working with J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which began with The Love of the Game, but kept on with this film, and I dare say into the Spider-Man trilogy.
Thank God. perhaps the greatest casting choice in cinema history.
Yeah.
That is hard to dispute.
Yeah.
Like a man so irreplaceable, they've brought him back.
Yes. Yeah. He's literally, he was in the MCU.
He couldn't find anyone else as good.
Yeah. Before the multiverse, he was just brought into the MCU. They're like, fuck it. He's J. Jonah Jameson for life.
Before we get away from the gift, I would say that one thing that I knew the gift from, it was the internet in the year 2000. And
Is this to do with Katie Holmes's state of undress?
It is, yes.
Fair enough. I just imagine you as the comic book guy now, just like waiting for the picture to load.
Ah, the internet king. Maybe he can facilitate faster nudity.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
I was a teenager. Get off my case. Anyway.
Lace the final brassiere.
Right, so number nine on your list, Dave.
Number nine on my list is Drag Me to Hell.
Righty then, that is strike two for Drag Me to Hell. And Dez.
Yeah, I guess it's time to talk about For Love of the Game.
Right, yes.
Should I? I guess, should I?
Yeah. Well, I should note, you're on a call with two British people, and yeah. I don't know how big baseball is in Canada.
Right. I mean, it's not as big as it is in America, but it's correct. A relatively big sport. My kids played it. I think David's playing it this year, so.
Well,
okay. I mean,
well,
look,
this
is very much like a very standard sports movie. Again, it's like, this is what Sam Raimi wanted to do. But, you know, like, why? You know, but I have to say, having seen a few episodes of Yellowstone, by just like being in the room when Stacey's watching it, because I don't really recommend it, but, Stacey was like, you know, he still looks pretty much the same. And I really have to agree, because Kevin Costner has looked like 47 since he was like 17, right? But I think he's charming in this. And my God, 90s Kelly Preston. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I just love, like, I think he shoots the baseball playing incredibly. You know, when you see these sports movies, it's not often that, like, the sports as presented in the film is actually any good or exciting, you know, or interesting, you know, like other baseball movies, you're watching the guy at bat, you know what I mean? This fucking movie, you're coming in on the ball, you know, it's wild, you know, it's very fun. So, that's what I appreciated about it the most, other than Kelly Preston. but I mean, it is easily the weakest of Kevin Costner's baseball trilogy.
I mean, I'll take your word for that, certainly.
Yeah.
But I mean, we were just talking about what is the least Sam Raimi film there is. I think this is a strong contender.
I was going to say the same thing.
Because, okay. I mean, the thing is, notwithstanding, apparently the reason he did it was because he himself is a massive fan of baseball. So you get him and Costner together, then obviously they're going to make a film like this.
Yeah.
But what makes it a Sam Raimi film? I mean, I suppose, as you say, the actual direction of the baseball, he says, as a foreigner who knows fuck all about baseball. I do appreciate it teaching me what a perfect game is meant to be and how rare it is.
Yeah.
But I still found it very hard to get invested because, okay, Kevin Costner is a guy who looks the same throughout his career. Also in the 90s, he was well known for being involved in very self-indulgent films he stars in and has final cut of.
Yeah.
And this film is that to a T. slightly different sport. But,
yeah, he was like the biggest movie star in the world for a couple of years.
Weirdly. Like 91 through, well, I suppose this was 98?
Yeah, like Bodyguard through
99.
The Postman or something? Is that what it was?
Like Prince of Thieves through,
right.
I don't know, Waterworld. But, I don't know.
I enjoy Waterworld, I gotta say. I'll
hold my hands up, I've never seen it. But, I don't know. And the other thing that kind of rubbed me the wrong way is the kind of opening montage titles of he's a young all-American boy growing up and he's great right. at baseball with his dad and everything. It's like, I have no connection to this whatsoever.
Yeah. I will contend, without the cool-looking baseball, this movie is dog shit. Like, it's not good. I will still never watch this again, but just like, the baseball looked fun. It looked, and you, sports don't look fun in movies to me.
No, that's true.
I don't enjoy sports, period, you know, very much. But I do enjoy sports movies, but often the sports look like dog shit in sports movies. And it absolutely does not in this one. That's really what I appreciate.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, like, you know, this felt like anyone could have made it. Not that, like, it's not competent, it's perfectly competently shot, but, like, it's just sort of fine. It's there. Like, the framing of the story is interesting, of him kind of reflecting on his life as he's bowling this game and then kind of halfway through, pitching this game, sorry. getting confused with cricket.
anyone for cricket?
and then him just sort of realizing halfway through that no one's on the Yankee side has actually scored yet because he's been so kind of in his own head, he actually hasn't noticed was kind of interesting. But yeah, like, you know, I mean, the performances are fine. I mean, like, also, I think John C. Reilly's really good in it. This is kind of as the catcher, Gus. It's fine, but I probably won't watch it again. Like, I didn't hate it, but, like, I didn't come away going, well, that's a movie that's changed my life either. So, you know, it was a perfectly acceptable way to spend a couple of hours.
Not a couple, Dave. Three. Okay. I might be unfair there.
No, it was 2 hours and 17 minutes. I was very aware of the time that I was spending.
Yeah, yeah. A little long in the tooth.
Yeah. That's Kevin Costner.
I mean, to be fair, like, yeah, if everything Middle America thought it was made into a human being, it would look like Kevin Costner.
Yeah,
I suppose that's the appeal.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to be more generic than a Kevin Costner baseball film than being a Kevin Costner Western.
Yeah, I'm certain that at least 1 year in the 90s, he was voted sexiest man alive or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen.
That happened, right? Yeah, okay, yeah. I don't see it.
Oh, yeah, no, honestly, I don't either.
Well, it's not again, like any of us were voting.
No, but like, you'd be surprised how often it crops up as a conversation in my household.
Really?
Yep.
What is Gillian's favourite Kevin Costner film?
Oh, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I think is a fantastic film, but I think he's the worst thing in it.
Oh, I'm right there with you.
I don't know, I love it. I love his accent.
Yeah, it's flawless for a man from wherever he's from.
Yeah, it's right up there with Christian Slater's. Two English-born sons of the soil.
He's too busy doing a Jack Nicholson impression to put an accent on.
And the other thing you're going, I wouldn't mind if they'd cast somebody with a similar accent as their dad, but their dad's Brian Blessed. It's only Brian Blessed. has a son that sounds like he's from Michigan.
He clearly married an American wife, Dave. That's all it is. Okay, so it's my number 9 pick, and here's a cat amongst the pigeons, Evil Dead 2.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pipe. See,
now,
and
now you've made an enemy.
Wow. Okay, number 8, Dave.
Well, I'm possibly about to make an enemy, because my number 8's the Evil Dead.
The original Evil Dead.
The original Evil Dead.
Right.
That's fair.
Okie dokie. 8 on your list, Test.
The Quick and the Dead.
The Quick and the Dead. And for me, number 8 is Drag Me to Hell. So this is our opportunity to talk about that film. As I say, it's something that Dez covered way back in the day on Dread Media. And then Sam Raimi had the good grace not to release any other films for the next however many
years. Ages. Just ages.
I mean, not that I remember Dread Media's review of Oz and the Great and the Powerful, but... That being said, this was an interesting one because it came after Raimi had done the Spider-Man trilogy and had just been dropped from making a fourth Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
And they decided to go in a different direction. For the worse, Donovan.
For sure. In my head, Bruce Campbell is Mysterio.
Yeah. And John Malkovich is the Vulture. We finally get the Dylan Baker lizard that everyone was after.
But and Ian still hates him.
Not that lizard.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying that if he had been the lizard, he probably would have had the same plan.
Yeah, but we'll never know. We'll never know. As such, I just hate Risa Farms. So, with regards to this film, this is the one I've watched most recently up to the date of recording. And this was, it was very much seen as a kind of return to form for Raimi insofar as he was deciding just to do straight horror as such. And it was and it wasn't, because it was more kind of horror comedy, which is why I kind of take points off it. Because if this film had been a straight horror film, I could just see this being right up there. Like, right up there. The fact that they had a lot of the gypsy woman antagonist somehow managing to expel all manner of bodily fluids throughout the film.
Yeah.
And then you've got the bit in the grave where it's filling with water and mud and British reference. All you needed was Dave Benson Phillips to stand over it cackling not to look like a children's game show.
That would have been a very different film.
It would have been a very different film.
Haunted by Dave Benson Phillips laughing all over this house.
I didn't even understand the reference, and I thought it was funny.
Thank you, Des. That's why they pay me the big bucks. But literally, if this was a straight horror film, because I found the ending very effective, I'm not entirely sure the film went A to B. I think it meandered a lot, getting to where it needed to get to, which I kind of would expect more of Raimi, based upon his track record and longevity. But be that as it may, I still found it an affecting film, but not without its flaws. I say it's lowest on Dez's list, but it's not so low. But that being said, you have done a review on it previously, contemporaneously. So I'll start with Dave.
Okay. First I watched for me on this one as well, and again, pretty recently. Yeah, I liked it a lot. I think it kind of speaks to the way that horror in general is made in mainstream film, that it kind of feels a bit more muted, because it was, like, I think it was just kind of having to avoid, like, a lot of horror these days has to avoid a hard R.
Yeah.
And so, like, you have to be creepy in other ways, because the kind of horror film which gets you an R rating these days isn't considered marketable as a mainstream film. Like, even with action films, they're much more muted these days. I mean, the latter Die Hards were all, like, 12 A's compared to the original,
right,
you know?
Right,
because in order to shoot for the widest possible audience, you have to kind of aim for the most kind of generic content, essentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not kind of not surprised that it's had its wings clipped a little bit. I mean, apparently it was an old script that him and Ivan Raimi have been kicking around for years and years.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
Like, it's not like it's something they just kind of came up for. They just kind of went back to the script and kind of redid it. So yeah, I kind of like the idea of it. It's this woman having a terrible time. But the interesting kind of moral implication of it as well, sort of like when she finally admits that she deliberately chose to do the wrong thing and it's entirely her fault.
Yeah.
When she thinks she's free of the curse. And just kind of like thrown in there to make sure you understand that she absolutely deserves this kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, when I say deserves it, yeah, there is obviously in the morality of horror films.
Like, yes.
People have to have there has to be a certain deservingness to it for some reason.
Yeah. A justification for their fate, yeah.
Yeah. But I thought it was quite, there were some quite tense moments when she was considering kind of passing the curse on to somebody else. The whole sequence of when they kind of summoned the spirit and tried to kill it was really good. Mm-hmm. And again, very Raimi. And probably the most Raimi thing in it is the fight between Alison Lohman and the old woman in the car. Like, there was a bit of that where she was basically a female Ash. Like, I could absolutely see that as being like a fight. That was like a fight that Ash would be having with a deadite in a car.
Yes.
Just using a stapler and just all sorts of stuff. That was, that felt very old school Raimi to me.
And the aforementioned bodily fluids.
Yes. I enjoyed that a lot. So, yeah, it's maybe not as good as some of his more classic stuff, but it's definitely a perfectly fine horror film. And again, I think it's about an hour and 40, so it kind of gets in and gets out. Doesn't outstay its welcome either.
Kind of
knows what it's doing. Generally speaking, I enjoyed it. Over to you, Des.
I mean, I enjoyed it too. I don't think it holds up as well as my first viewing. I think it's probably a great movie to see in the theater. I think I liked it a lot more having seen it in the theater than if I saw it on my couch. But I think meandering is a good word for it. I like the setup, and I think it's got one of the great movie endings.
Actually,
I fucking love the ending. But like the story just like runs in circles for me. It's like it was a boring watch this time for me, honestly. But it does, you know, and then it sort of boils down to a few gross out moments. I love the fight in the car and the great ending. And also, funnily enough, this just occurred to me, like perhaps the Raimiest movie of all of them, you know, like
very possibly.
Yeah. And
since The Evil Dead. Certainly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I mean, it kind of rings hollow on a rewatch for me. So
that's interesting. That may be why me and Ian have scored it higher then.
Yeah.
Because it was your first viewing as well, wasn't it, Ian?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So he and I watched it the first time, we scored it a bit higher. It was your second watch, you found it lacking on a rewatch, so it ended up lower. So that's interesting.
I think walking out of the theater after that ending, I was definitely pretty fucking jazzed. I was definitely pretty jazzed about it. But, you know, watching it again, it's a fucking great ending. It's a great ending. But, yeah, the movie just doesn't hang together for me. You know, like, I don't know if you guys have seen or even heard of Thinner.
I've heard of Thinner.
Yeah,
it's like it's a movie based on a lesser Stephen King novel. But, I mean, honestly, for me, that movie does this story so much better.
Right.
Well, also, and I covered this on a previous Flickchart forum on the basis it was name-checked in science fiction double feature in Rocky Horror Show. There is a film called Night of the Demon from the 50s, which is very much about passing on a curse to avoid a supernatural demon.
That's based on Casting the Runes by M.
It is, yes. Yeah. And I seem to remember myself and Dan Toland and Professor Chris from the forums. I don't remember if we all loved it, but I enjoyed it, and that's what counts. So I will also say something that I did find interesting about... This is more kind of trivia around the film, is our protagonist is played by Alison Lohman, who was stepping in for Elliot Page, who was meant to be in the title role. But scheduling conflicts meant that it didn't pan out that way. And basically, Lohman retired after this film. She'd got married to one of the directors from Crank, and concentrated on raising her family. So, ostensibly, if you think about it, the end scene of this film would theoretically be the end of her filmic career.
That's kind of funny.
It is. I mean, unfortunately, she's had cameos here and there for other things that her husband's made. But
unfortunately, she's continued to work and ruined the metaphor that I had.
I mean, it spoils the metaphor.
Damn her.
I'm not going to begrudge her, you know, earning something for the benefit of her family.
Why can't people stick to my narrative?
I'm not a newspaper editor, come on. So then, number seven, over to you, to Dave.
My number seven is Spider-Man 2. Oh,
Spider-Man 2, the return of Jafar.
Electric Boogaloo.
No, return of Jafar. Des, number seven for you.
My number seven is Spider-Man 3.
Right. I was wondering.
Has Dave said Spider-Man 3
already? He has, yes.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that.
At number 13.
That's why I gasped a little bit when you said Spider-Man 2. I'm like,
yeah, we're going...
Before Spider-Man 3?
I think we'd all gasp at that.
That would be a legitimate response.
Man, this final list is going to be weird.
I'll say.
I'm telling you that right now.
So we're going from the very bottom of my list to two up from the bottom of Dave's list to number seven.
On the higher side of mine, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, explain yourself, Reddit.
Look, I have given this film its share of shit over the years.
Okay.
Right? You can go back and look at the forums. I'm sure it's still there. I was fucking merciless to this movie. Hated it. And I'd like to say with hindsight that I think a lot of that was undeserved.
Right.
It's goofy. It's too goofy, for sure. It's too goofy. But all three of the movies are kind of goofy. This one just pushes it a little too far.
Yes.
You know, it's... That whole studio mandated three villains thing is a little much, but I don't know. I like Topher Grace
as
Eddie Brock.
Well. Yeah.
I don't know. I think the movie's all right. You know, I think it's better than your typical MCU film. It's just the worst of his Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
By a long shot. Hmm. Still, but watching it again, which has to be like the, I don't know, third time I've watched it, I really did like, I'm like, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. You know?
Yeah. The Mary Jane Watson character, fun, really fun.
Perhaps not the greatest casting there.
It's a bit of a mess. The introduction of Gwen Stacy and Captain Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
Does it add anything much? I'm going to say no. The three villains. the three villains.
Well,
thing,
you were looking
mentioned.
For us to answer, were you?
I will say, I am not nearly as down on Topher Grace as most people are, as you say, Des. And then I also like, I will say, when I reviewed it for Comic Relief, I was quite kind on the film, but I think because my girlfriend at the time was also high on it, I kind of influenced my decision. Sure. Whereas I've rewatched this and I'm like, ooh, no, it's a mess. That being said, I do enjoy corrupted douchebag Peter. You've got the memes of the dancing
yeah,
and everything. Yeah. That's good fun. And the effects of Sandman, really good.
I laughed more at that this time, but the first time I was like I had stink face watching that stuff the first time I watched it. Like, I was angry about that shit. But watching it this time, I'm like, yeah, it's fucking stupid, but it's funny. right?
But, I mean, it's just such a come down from the level of the first two, which I think really hurts it.
But sorry, I walked all over you saying Sandman's awesome.
Sandman, beautiful design, really good characterization. Not that big a fan of him being implicated in Uncle Ben's death, but
yeah, that stuff's dumb. But that's
But that's classic third film of the trilogy stuff, isn't it?
You got to tie them into the lore somehow. But honestly, like, if you're talking about, like, translating a comic book character directly from the comic books, I don't know if there's a better example than Sandman in this movie.
Hmm.
And honestly, most of the time, that would probably be horrible.
Yeah. But
I think it really worked for Sandman.
I mean, that's something that Raimi's very good at doing, is making villain origins plausible.
Right.
Despite the fact that, you know, they're obviously, you know, they're based on comics. They're obviously nonsense. But, you know, the fact that there's a degree of plausibility, it's like when, you know, when Peter's come across him for the first time, and it's like getting rid of sand out of his boot. And he's just casually saying, where do these guys come from?
right.
Which is a very good way of saying that, yeah, you know how every film creates a villain for me to fight? again, we've got the disappointing James Franco being disappointing.
Yeah.
And the whole butler clues him in on his dad's villainy. Like, right at the third act of the final film of the trilogy, when the antipathy has been fueling Harry since the end of the first film.
Yeah.
That's just clunky and bad.
Yeah.
So, and I've said a lot about it. We've had a Spider-Man flick chart forum, no less. So yeah. I'm not going to retread old ground that much more. Dave, Spider-Man 3.
I mean, I feel a lot of the fault for Spider-Man 3 lies at the feet of Abby Arad's massive hard-on for Venom.
Yeah.
Because, I think part of the reason I think the dark Spider-Man stuff is so goofy is because basically Raimi just doesn't give a shit about the character.
right.
he honestly couldn't give a toss.
Yeah.
Because, I think you can see in this, you can see the film that Raimi wanted to make, which is very clearly Sandman is the main villain with Harry, and then Harry having the turnaround and dying. And, theoretically, you kind of lift Venom out of that, and that film, that kind of plot structure would work.
Yeah.
And so you've had, but because they've insisted on bringing Venom into it, yeah, it feels really crowbarred in. I've got no issue with Topher Grace as Eddie Brock. I mean, I think, if you're going to cast somebody as essentially the anti-Toby Maguire, Topher Grace isn't a bad choice.
right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think
That's some casting with some real cultural understanding.
Actually, yeah.
Right? Like, if there was social media back then, people would have been losing their fucking minds.
Yeah.
Like real, you know what I mean? Real social, you know, like.
Oh, new, absolutely.
Yeah. New, we're critical of every single fucking thing on Earth, social media. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think Thomas Hayden Church is fantastic as Philip Marco. Like, I don't understand why the Green Goblin has a snowboard.
right. Really takes the sting out of, like, the Goblin Glider, you know?
Yeah.
When he looks like when he looks like a character from a movie 10 years prior, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And extreme sports was big.
Yeah. Why not just bring Rocket Racer in as a character?
I think like it's mainly due to the fact that like Raimi was handed a character and a plot line which he wasn't interested in doing and didn't want to include and had no original plans to include in the film. He was insisted upon, so he phoned it in. And, you know, he clearly could not give the slightest shit about Venom. Yeah. Right down to the character design. Like, it's just, like, the black suit with some teeth on it. Especially when you, like, when you see kind of what's been done with Venom since. I mean, like, whether you like or loathe the other Venom film, like the Tom Hardy Venom films, Venom looks like Venom.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, I think that's kind of like the main problem with it. I mean, these things like you can see where like something unwelcome has just been shoved into the script, and obviously, sort of that means that's kind of taking up space where sort of more character development for the other people could have happened.
Yeah,
I mean, so, you could have just had Eddie Brock as an annoyance throughout the film.
Set him up
for the fourth movie, right?
Yeah.
Or tag on at the very end of the movie, you know, the symbiote comes to Eddie's apartment or whatever, you know? Like, lead in. It's too much for this movie. Too much.
Yeah. Whereas, like, and I think, like, the whole thing with the butler explaining things at the end, sort of like, had there not been all of the Venom stuff shoved in there, there might have been some time for some genuine subtle explanation for that, for Harry to come around.
Right.
But because, you know, the film is kind of running out of time, they have to have sort of like, the butler just go, oh yeah, by the way, your dad was a dick.
He's Willem Dafoe, don't you know?
Yeah.
And also, as you can see, it's running out of time. Venom approaches Sandom. You're a bad guy. I'm a bad guy. Let's team up. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of what my main problem is. I can see the actual third Spider-Man film in there, and what I can see of is actually pretty good, but there's this kind of like, like Venom has been sort of like, like shoved into the script in random parts, and it's kind of like taking away from the film I actually want to see.
Yeah. It is a bit of a momentum stopper, that whole plot line. Even though, again, Topher Grace pulled it off very well.
Yeah.
Not his fault at all.
I don't think that like, anything's particularly badly acted. It's just, like, the whole thing reeks of studio interference, and it's, it just doesn't work.
No. Just a mess, basically. Okay, so number 7 on my list, it is A Strike 2 for The Evil Dead.
Wow.
So we get into the number 6 picks on our list. Over to Dave.
My number 6 is Spider-Man.
The original Spider-Man.
The original Spider-Man.
Right, yeah.
Your actual Spider-Man.
Dez, number 6, please.
My number 6 is The Evil Dead.
The Evil Dead.
Three strikes.
So let's talk about the film that started it all off.
Yeah.
There is no better person to open this dialogue than Mr. Doomsday himself.
Oh, all right. Look, it's number 6 on my list, but there is no denying that this is just like a revolutionary movie for the genre, certainly for Sam Raimi.
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell, yeah, I mean, but for what it was, and, you know, for what they had to make it, it's a fucking masterpiece. And what he was able to do on that budget, making that movie look so good, that camera movement, it really is. It's Sam Raimi birthing himself fully formed in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, holy shit, this is so inventive. It's so cool. And it's a little nasty too, you know, a little mean spirited, which is always helpful when I'm watching a movie. I like a little mean spirited movie. I don't know. You know, it's overshadowed by its sequels. But I still think that The Evil Dead is a masterpiece in a lot of ways, a masterpiece of independent cinema.
Yeah. Fair enough. Dave?
Very much agree. I mean, like, you know, there's no denying the achievements of what Sam Raimi pulled off in making The Evil Dead. I mean, like, you know, if you've read any of the kind of stories of everything they went through while making that, kind of like staying in a freezing cold cabin in the woods, and then and like Bruce Campbell getting regularly poked with sticks by Sam Raimi to wake him up and telling him to do it better.
And oh, that's right. So, Sam Raimi's an asshole.
And also kind of very interesting for the horror genre itself, insofar that it doesn't have a final girl, it has a final guy.
Yeah.
And even though he's a guy with a gun at the end, like, there's still a palpable sense of terror for that character. Like,
yeah.
So that's quite innovative as well, because, like, yeah, he's not like a... Ash isn't... like, he's very different from the Ash that we think of as Ash, obviously later on down the line, but showing like what is a very terrified man.
Yeah,
as your final one was quite, you know, could have been seen as a risk, but like, probably the sort of thing of, like, a mainstream production company that someone wouldn't have touched.
Yeah, right.
They probably would have said, like, you know, can't you make that a woman? So yeah, everything they achieved with that absolutely should be saluted, and it's not. And the reason it's going to lower on my list is not, again, not because it is bad, it's because I prefer some other things more.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, absolutely, completely agree with you. Like, everything that, like the fact that it launched Sam Raimi's career is entirely deserved, because, like, look at it. Like, it was, like, made for threepence and a pickled egg.
Yeah.
And
think of any genre movie in the past 30 years that has that shot of racing up towards somebody and coming in on them tight at the very end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about how many times that's been used, and then think about who invented it. And that was Sam Raimi in this movie. Like, long lasting impact on cinema as well, you know, like, just so innovative for this young cantankerous kid from Michigan, right? Yeah. Wild. What an achievement. But still, I mean, he went on to make better movies too, right?
Yeah. And it is scary as hell. Like, it's a scary old film. And not just because of the gore, because there is that kind of sense of unsettling creepiness throughout it as well.
Right.
Even in the scenes where there isn't anything kind of horrific happening, there is that tension, that kind of, like, you're on edge.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, the whole possession of, because ostensibly, I mean, so you've got Ash's sister in there, as well as his girlfriend and a mate and their girlfriend. Yeah. So obviously they're relatively close knit, and the idea that they've been possessed and turned into deadites. So you've got the moral quandary of what to do with them, and their eyes glazed over, giggling inanely, which could, I mean, in this film it's creepy, but at the same time a less sympathetic audience member could see it as ridiculous. But at the same time, it has the kind of aesthetic as a kind of video nasty from the 70s. Say, like,
this was a video nasty, right?
It was on the list.
Well, that's the thing, but it's kind of subtly different from A Last House on the Left.
Of course, yeah.
Because it's not as graphic in the the sadism. I mean, yeah. Yes, you do have a woman who gets sexually assaulted by a tree.
Tree,
but,
yeah.
but it's a tree, which is different.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So it doesn't feel like it's quite in the same league. It feels like something apart. And it's not got the humour of the sequels, but in some ways I think that's a good thing for this film. Because yeah. I think that the humour goes a bit overboard with certainly Evil Dead 2. But with this film, it
we'll
stayed...
I agree on that.
Well, what I mean to say, Des, is that in this film, it isn't kind of played for yucks, in a way. It's like...
No, definitely not. This is serious. This movie's
yeah,
serious.
It's like Campbell's not mugging to the camera. I mean, you do have, like, the, as you say, the massive zoom-in on his face at the end as he's screaming right. in terror. But everything that comes before that, he's forced into out of necessity because he's been toyed with by demonic forces. But he's basically playing it straight.
Yeah, for sure.
Which makes it more interesting in my book.
And that stab in the ankle? Good stuff.
Oh, that's good stuff. Ow.
Yeah, when you look at something, you're like, fuck, that looks like it hurts. You know?
Yeah.
That's good shit but, right there.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where you're just going to go, oh!
Yeah.
You just have an immediate visceral reaction to it. You can't not.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
But the fact that, you know, by the time one of the most sympathetic members of the cast has been turned into a dreadite, and they're basically a rotting rubber mask under a trapdoor.
Right.
For like the rest of the film. It's like, I could be po-faced and say, well, it doesn't go into the completely ridiculous comedy of blah, blah, blah. And then you've still got her under the trapdoor going, I'll get you! Ha, ha, ha. Yeah. Get my gun! Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but no, I very much appreciate its place in horror cinema. And again, it's seventh on my list, which is about mid-table. But again, it's just really because I think everything else on my list I just prefer a bit more.
Yeah.
I mean,
is it my sixth?
It's your sixth, yes.
Yeah, it's my sixth, and I called it a masterpiece, so.
Oh, well, there we go. I'm getting Kubrick flashbacks here. It's like, Des and Chris going, oh yes, The Killing. It's such a perfect, great, wonderful film. It's number seven in my list. The Killing's fucking awesome, but still, it's just the thing about this segment, really.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Right, so number six for me, we're not veering too far off. We're in the Evil Dead trilogy, and my number six, and it's the first mention of this film, is Army of Darkness. Right. So there we go. We're into the top fives. So, Dave, what is your number five?
My number five is Evil Dead 2.
Return of Jafar. Okay. So,
Die, Dark Man, die.
Des, what's your number five?
Were we recording at that point?
Possibly.
My number five is Army of Darkness.
It is Army of Darkness. Okie dokie. My number five is The Quick and the Dead. Oh. And that's only a strike two.
Wow. Okay.
So we get to number four for Dave.
Well, it's strike three because my number four is The Quick and the Dead.
Lovely. Okay. Well, Dave, it's for just the top of your list. The top choice for you. What do you want to say about The Quick and the Dead?
I absolutely love this. I enjoy kind of an offbeat western of many kinds, as me and Ian occasionally enjoying Wild Wild West.
Offbeat of westerns.
That goes too far, gentlemen.
What so far about a giant mechanical spider?
That's... I mean, there was something about this that kind of almost made it feel like it was an adaptation of a video game that didn't exist.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, this, it feels like this could be sort of like Street Fighter with six users. Because you've got all the kind of different kind of individual characters with their backstories and stuff. And yeah, you know, there's the tough one, the silent one, the cocky one, the girl one.
Yeah. 100%. The Lance Hendrickson one.
Yeah. But yeah, I was going to say, but also such a top draw cast of great character actors who were kind of on the way up,
yeah,
and sort of some legends and stuff. I mean, like, these days, the idea of that there is a film which has Gene Hackman, Russell Crowe, Leonardo DiCaprio, Sharon Stone, Keith David, and Lance Henriksen in it.
And Pat Hingle, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a hell of a cast.
Gary Sinise, you know, like, this cast goes so deep. It's crazy cast.
Jigsaw. Yeah.
And, yep. And there's just, it's a very Raimi film as well. He's clearly having a lot of fun, building up the tension for the quick draws. The big Dutch angle on the clock before things go off. Each of the gunfighters have got their own personalities and styles. So you got like Lance Henriksen being kind of like the traveling fairground shooter kind of guy who's killed a lot of people. And you got like Keith David with his swivel gun mechanism thing on his, and at the top of it all, you got Gene Hackman just being kind of basically reprising his role from Unforgiven with a bit more moustache twirling.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, it's great. Like, everyone just seems to be having a great time. It's like it's a really simple story. I just had a lot of fun with it.
I want to say that if there's one thing that this film shows with regards to Sam Raimi in abundance, it's his love of subtlety.
Yeah.
Our villain is called Herod.
for sure. Yeah, there's not a lot to this movie, you know, but it's a fun time at the movies, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everything Dave just said. It's not quite an all-star cast. It's like an all-B-list cast from the
but it's a top-tier cast, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the fact you've got all these people who are clearly very good at just adding everything to raise the sum of its parts. And what you get is this... I mean, it's number five on my list. It's like, if it weren't quite relatively lightweight, it might be higher. But even then, there's some really dark bit. It's like, you mentioned Gary Sinise, the scene he's involved in. That's fucking dark.
There's an intensity to this movie. And look, like, everything from The Quick and the Dead up is a movie I love on my list. So, it's probably the lowest on mine, right? Yeah.
It is. Yes.
I think so.
Yeah. But I just had a shitload of fun. And all the innovative, like, gunslinging camera work stuff is just delightful. It does have some, like, fun surprises as well, script-wise. Even though there's not a lot to the story, it still has a couple moments where it surprises you. And, I mean, anytime you've got Gene Hackman as the villain, you've got my attention.
Yeah.
Except for Superman 3.
He's not in Superman
3. Oh, Superman 4, I mean, sorry. Even though I sort of, kind of love that movie.
Superman 4, he has the most cutting burn on John Cryer possible. Right. It's like, because John Cryer is playing his nephew, it's like, I consider you to be the Dutch elm disease of my family tree.
It has its moments.
It does. Honestly, there's not a lot to say. It's just a very fun, Western.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really simple premise, really well pulled off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, one of the more surprising things is, like, why did Sharon Stone choose this as her next movie? You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
As far as people, you know, as far, like, sort of B-list actors, you know, like, Gary Sinise certainly wasn't at his popularity peak at this point. I mean, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio was still on the way up, right? But, like, Sharon Stone was a legitimate huge movie star.
Well, Stone
co-produced. She definitely wanted to make this movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. She handpicked
Raimi as the director.
Right. Yeah. She really just wanted to be a gunslinger. And I really, you know, I respect that.
I think she's really good in it as well.
She's great.
It's a great departure from, obviously, you know, she got famous for playing a lot of kind of femme fatale kind of roles. So this being like she gets to show a lot more vulnerability in this, but also a lot more kind of steel as well. And yeah, I think she's excellent at all of it.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite Sharon Stone films.
She kicks Commissioner Gordon off a chair for just assuming that she was a whore.
Yep.
So,
well, who hasn't been?
Well, it's the last time you disrespect me, Jim Gordon. Right, number four for you, Vendez.
Oh, my number four is Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Strike two for Spider-Man. And for me, at number four, and I think this is the first mention of it, is Darkman. We're coming up to our top three. We still have six films to discuss. This is exciting times.
So weird.
Very weird, very weird.
You can feel the tension in the air.
So into the top three. Dave, what is your bronze medal?
Darkman.
There we go. Dez.
Mine is also Darkman.
There we go. We're talking about Darkman. Dave and I did a whole Pulp Diction on this nonsense, so if you want to kick things off.
Sure. I mean, the 90s were just, like, rife with, like, weird superhero movies and weird comic book adaptations and original films, superhero films. But for me, this is the movie that kicked the door down for that, you know, like, Raimi said over and over he wanted to make a Batman movie. He wanted to make The Shadow. And when he got tired of not being able to do that, he just said, fuck it, I'll make up Darkman.
Yeah.
He did.
He did?
You know, he's a pulp superhero. He's a universal monster. You know, it's just so cool. And again, top-notch cast.
Yeah.
Fucking Durant is one of the best movie villains of the 90s. Like, easily. On and on and on. Darkman fucking rules. I will stand by that forever.
And I will stand at your side, sir.
And you my axe.
Now, Ian, answer for yourself. Why did you give such a low rating to Darkman?
So, everyone, so it's number three on Des's list, number three on Dave's list, number four on my list. Why do I shit on Darkman so much?
You know what this means? This means Darkman is going to be the number one Sam Raimi movie. I'm calling it now.
Really?
I haven't done the math, but I'm calling it now.
No, you haven't. Okay. So, well, what I'll say is, first of all, you say, oh, what an amazing they got fucking Liam Neeson to star in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, pre-Schindler's List Liam Neeson, but still.
Still a movie star at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were so big on Durant as the villain that they started the film off with him.
Yeah.
and showing off his villainy before we get into the opening credits. And look,
when did this movie come out? 1990. Look, that cigar cutter scene has stayed with me every day since I saw this in the theater in 1990. One of the meanest and cruelest things you'll see in movies in the 90s, for sure. God, I love Durant.
I have seven more points.
Oh,
so good. It's kind of great to see Larry Drake being such a shit.
Right, yeah. Usually pretty lovable, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, like, funny, he's actually not even the main villain.
Right.
Like the main villain is Colin Freels and his, like, rivet gun.
Well, as I said when we did it on Pulp Diction, there's more than a few nods to RoboCop here.
And for sure. Very similar movies, yeah.
Durant is very much the Bodica of this film. With Colin Freels being the Ronnie Cox guy. I would say, just because it is a superhero film with man in the title, why dark, Master Wayne? Dark frightens me, Alfred.
It makes my face melt. Dark.
It's time my enemies shared my true dread. I mean, again, we covered most of these points on Pulp Diction, but it's just a really entertaining film, and moreover, it's giving Sam Raimi a chance after he's hit it big with his first two Evil Dead films. It's like, what can we get this guy to do if we just gave him a fairly big budget and relatively free rein to do what he likes?
Yeah.
And it's this.
Yeah.
And they're like, rules. You know, this is going well. We'll give you some extra money for a helicopter chase. It's like, okay, fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't mind and if I do.
Yeah, it's just the fact that it's just such a wonderful blend of kind of clearly, like, yeah, you can see that pulp sensibility on it, but the fact it's also just so horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everything that happens to poor old Dr. Peyton Westlake. So kind of, you know, getting into that dark, bad place. It's just sort of like, yeah, just a series of unpleasant happenings to him, culminating in him being blown up in a fireball and thrown into a river. And to be fair, like, the makeup effects of the kind of, you know, that real kind of Phantom of the Opera-y kind of thing, where you can, like, it's only just kind of, just that one bit around his eye that's fine, and that, and when he keeps kind of catching that bit in the light.
Yeah.
And just, yeah.
And I love the gimmick of like the fake skin he can create, but it only lasts a certain amount of time in the sunlight, right? So that's really, you know, it's, you know, obviously built in weakness there, but really, really fun to see that used on screen.
Yeah.
And the kind of symmetry of you see at the outset Westlake's lab before it's destroyed. And then once he's Darkman and he's recreating his experiments for the synthetic skin, he's in some kind of disused mill or something, and everything's a bit more perverse and DIY. And then also once he's created a synthetic hand, there's this glorious scene where he's typing on a keyboard, one with the synthetic hand typing and the other with his burnt hand.
Right.
Plus, it has the legendary moment of Liam Neeson shouting, "Take the fucking elephant."
And then, here's the dancing freak!
You know, I've just come to the realization, I think this is like a splatterpunk movie. Like, very similar to like the splatterpunk literary movement of like the prior few years. You know, there's a political aspect to it. On the villain side, right? And so there's that, and there's like real horror and like literally like walking up and on the sidewalk and looking up and seeing somebody's face start to bubble and smoke, you know, like it's like, whoa, what the fuck? It's like there's a lot of horror. And then just like the way he looks, period, right? Just a lot of horror. And then, you know, you got some dude chopping people's fingers off with a cigarette cutter and, or cigar cutter. And, you got yourself a pretty gnarly horror side to this movie too.
Ted Raimi being run over by a lorry.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, spoilers. Right, so we move on to my number three pick, and that is A Simple Plan. And that is a strike two for that one. So, Dave, number two for you.
Strike three, A Simple Plan.
There we go. So this was the first time viewing for me. And quite frankly, I was blown away. I was not expecting what I saw. And what I saw was ostensibly the treasure of Sierra Madre in some kind of rural setting in America.
Montana or something.
Yeah, you know, something
where,
like that.
I can't remember where it takes place.
Yeah. So, Des, it's lowest on your list. When I say lowest, I say it's down at number 12. So, we're clearly at odds here.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this conversation before. You know, like, I've never thought this was a good movie. I find it boring. And on rewatch this time, yeah, I still agree with myself. I don't find this to be a compelling movie at all.
Interesting.
I love the book. That's the funny part.
Right. Great. So you've read the book. Okay.
Yeah, that's probably part of the problem. And I mean, like, cause there's so much about this movie that I should love. You know, like, I love, like, you know, I'm Canadian, so I love, like, cold noir, you know, like, what, you know, like, you're in this place, you gotta fucking bundle up against the wind and shit, but then there's also, like, dark crime stuff happening. You got Bill Paxton, right? Like,
very Canadian.
Yeah. But no, I love Bill Paxton, you know, and I've never been able to get into this movie.
Okay. I mean, I agree. Bill Paxton's great in this film. Even better, I think, was Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah. See, I don't like him either.
I don't like him as a person, but I think in this film, he does a very good job.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. not getting convinced Des on that one. No. Okay. Let's pivot to Dave. let's ignore Des. Dave, what were you liking about this?
I'm well aware that I knew that was going to happen.
Shush, Dave is speaking.
This is the most Ian's ever fought for my voice in the entire time we've known each other.
I concur.
This is my first viewing of this. I was kind of like aware of it. I was kind of interested to see what it was like, but didn't really know what to expect going in. And yeah, I really liked it. Again, I can see how it can be viewed as being slow and boring, but I kind of liked the slow burn of it. But I can understand why somebody else wouldn't. So yeah, I don't have I kind of don't object to that as a take. I like that.
No, I'm here. You know.
But yeah, I like the kind of like much like I said about the gift. That's that kind of like growing just sense of just general unease, even in sort of like scenes where it's seemingly mundane. Well, kind of yeah, obviously that kind of whole thing which has been done in a lot of films of, you know, just somebody coming up with their situation and then it just slowly unraveling as other people kind of, you know, go off the map and start doing their own thing. The kind of twist which with Gary Cole turning up towards the end, which yeah, Gary Cole. Gary Cole's in this. That's and the end. I love the ending.
Mm.
I won't spoil for anyone who's not seen it, but the way it ends is it's kind of tragically satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I mean, again, this is a film you can very much argue that doesn't feel very much like a Sam Raimi film.
Yeah.
And I think there's a conscious desire to kind of step back and just on the basis that it is a very well-casted film, to let the cast kind of play out the dialogue, which in and of itself kind of shows what the drama is and what the tensions between characters are. I will say the one bit that really made me think, ah, yes, Raimi, and the bit that made me laugh out loud. Slight spoiler, although I won't say who it is. There comes a point where someone's blown away with a shotgun, and that made me howl.
Yes.
Pretty I'm just like, that was far too quick and against the grain of everything going on in this film to not be a conscious choice on Raimi's part.
No, I'm well aware that my take on this movie is not enjoyed by many, let's just say. I've experienced this in the past before.
Yes, I did not enjoy your take on this film. No more flick chart forums, shall Des do.
I understand. The thing is, like, with there are films like this where it is kind of like slow burn and build up, and it's all about slowly ramping up tension. And I think there are films like this, which in a similar vein to this, which I haven't enjoyed for similar reasons. So I think you either kind of buy into the hook of the characters and the story it's telling, or you don't. And if you don't, you're just not going to enjoy it.
Right.
And like I said, there are other slow burns similar to this, which I don't especially enjoy. So, yeah, this could have gone either way for me. As it turns out, it went positively.
Good stuff. Okay, Des, what is the runner-up pick on your list?
I only decided this like right before we recorded, so I'm just going to say Spider-Man 2.
Righto, Spider-Man 2. Strike T for that one. Am I going to be in agreement? I've gone with the original Spider-Man.
Ah.
And that is our cue to talk about Spider-Man from 2002. Why spiders, Master Bruce? Spiders frighten me, Alfred. It's time my enemies learned a taste of my dread. My brother, Pandy, not his actual name. His actual name is Andrew Pandronicus Wilson. He likes to joke that this is my favourite film. It isn't. That's Casablanca. But I have
it's
very...
It's a close second, though.
Oh, it's up there. I think actually M is second if I look at my flick chart. But the thing is, I have a lot of nostalgia for Spider-Man. Because it was pretty much, I think it was the first film I bought for myself on DVD. And I remember, it's just a film I remember seeing at a formative age. I was 17 and Kirsten Dunst in The Rain in that dress.
Yeah, right, yeah, for sure.
You know.
For sure.
I mean, I'm sure people slightly older than me had similar feelings. But when you're 17, yes. So,
Was the internet used a lot then?
It was the dawning age of the internet. Kirsten Dunst, Katie Holmes. But moreover, and as someone who didn't grow up reading Spider-Man comics, and I mean, there was the 90s Spider-Man TV show that I caught here and there, but otherwise I wasn't a big Spider-Man guy, but I did go and see it and I absolutely adored it. Like, warts and all, for all the Power Rangers effect of the villain. You know, at the end of the day, I enjoyed the kind of Silver Age retelling of Spider-Man. I always thought Tobey Maguire was a good actor. I liked his chemistry with Kirsten Dunst. Willem Dafoe is fucking amazing casting as Norman Osborn. Says I. 100%. Again, says I, who doesn't have the comics lore in mind, but even then, I think people have borne me out on that one. and I just really enjoyed it. And I go back to it every now and then. It's just... And when the only thing that I note that kind of says it is dated, and it really annoys Donovan Morgan Grant, so I will say it again here, to annoy Macy Donovan Gray. Morgan Grant, is that Macy Gray is in it for some reason.
I knew you were going to say like, Macy Gray.
Why is everyone against Macy Gray? I'm not against Macy Gray, Donovan. She
no,
was just
he's like,
very...
why are you people so against Macy Gray? He you-peopled us.
Well, that's a slightly different conversation. But in any event, I fucking love Spider-Man. I mean, it's number two on my list. And I want to hear other praise. Who has it higher? Who has it higher in their list? Des has it higher.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it's going to be repetitive. Because I love Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin. You know, like, I think when I first watched it, I didn't like his costume.
You wouldn't be alone there.
Yeah, but I really like it on, you know, on this watch for some reason. I don't know, maybe I just accepted it more. This movie is so fun. And it's a rare comic book movie that actually improves upon the character in some way, in that Spider-Man shoots webs from his wrist.
Yes.
Like not from a web shooter, but from his wrist. Because that solves a problem with the comic book Spider-Man.
Mm.
Because if teenage Peter Parker is capable of making an engineering feat such as the web shooter, why is he not rich?
Yeah.
Right? It's hard to buy money troubles in that case. But guess what? Now that, you know, now that it's a biological thing, that gets rid of that problem. That's like the one problem I've always had with Spider-Man in the comic books.
Yeah. It's literally an episode title of the Batman the Animated Series for the Riddler. If you're so smart, why aren't you rich?
Right. Right.
Although the question about it being organic is just, well, why isn't it coming out of his ass?
Very true. Very true. I think you need to watch some Venture Brothers. It's like, I think that guy's just called the Arachnid, but that's where his webbing comes from.
Yeah. He's not very popular.
No. A little creepy.
A little. Okay, Dave?
Well, I mean, as a child, Spider-Man was probably second only to Batman in terms of my formative kind of exposure to superheroes in general. I remember as a kid, they showed the kind of Nicholas Hammond TV show on, like, in the kind of early 80s, like, on a Saturday afternoon, which is where I remember seeing that.
Yeah, I have vague memories of that, yeah.
I watched Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends as a '80s cartoon growing up. Yeah, love that. I mean, that kind of introduced me to the X-Men as well. So, yeah, I'm a big Spider-Man fan. So, obviously, I was very excited when this was announced, and it didn't disappoint, and it kind of still doesn't. Obviously, well, sort of echo the fact that Willem Dafoe is fantastic. Obviously, J.K. Simmons looks like he's been ripped straight off the page and thrown in front of a camera.
Unbelievable. So good.
Yeah, and Tobey Maguire is really good at this, and also, I forgot the name of the actor who plays Aunt May. Rosemary Harris, yeah. I mean, like, she's a fan, again, almost straight from the comic page. I mean, a lot of this just feels like he's somehow got a film camera into a comic book.
Yeah, for sure. It very much feels like early Spider-Man comics.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing. What other comic book movies do that? You know, I think you could probably argue the Superman, the motion picture or whatever. Superman, the movie. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard it kind of compared to it. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of like the generation of comic book film fans who kind of saw Spider-Man as a kid. It was as transformative for them as watching people at our own age who watched Superman as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of like that kind of, here's just a good guy being good against bad stuff. And yeah, and I think it's the best version of one of the purest takes on it, I think.
Yeah.
It's a very, very good version of Spider-Man. what can I say that hasn't already been said by people better educated than me?
Well, that's very kind of you to say, Dave.
Well, you did get a private school.
Yeah, I did. Yes. Which makes me better than you.
Absolutely. Yes. That's the way it works.
Twas ever thus. And then also, you know, even Chad Kroeger can't ruin this film.
And actually, I kind of like that.
Exactly.
You know what? The song's not that bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. I may be remembering wrong, but it feels like it was one of the last kind of big movie tie-in songs. You know, like back in the 80s and the 90s, the movie tie-in song was a big thing. Like, you'd have the music video, which have kind of like shots from the film in it and stuff like that, you know.
Baby! I can pay you to a kiss from a rose.
Yeah, and like your Bryan Adams and stuff, you know. Whereas just like these days, it's just not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Or if it is, I can't say I've noticed it, but I think that was kind of like, Hero was kind of like one of the last versions of that, you know, like the big film tie-in. Well, we have composed this song for this film.
I think you'll find Pitbull did an admirable job for Men in Black 3.
Right. Well, I mean, music videos aren't a very good marketing prospect anymore.
Not nowadays, yeah. No.
So, I mean, because they just go up on YouTube. You know, and it's just like, it's one of a billion things. So I think it's more, the music videos now are more concentrated on, you know, marketing the band rather than working in some sort of movie tie-in, because the movie tie-in doesn't even matter anymore, you know? So you don't see music videos with movie scenes in them anymore. It is interesting.
It's a musical subgenre I miss, the movie tie-in song.
Yeah. Hey, I love a good soundtrack. I bought soundtracks for movies I didn't even like.
Yeah.
There also used to be tie-in video games for films as well.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, really shitty video games.
They're almost always awful.
Yeah. Pandy actually worked on one for one of the Pirates of the Caribbean films.
Oh, wow.
But that video game studio no longer exists.
you mean the video game based on a movie based on a ride at a amusement park?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
That is the order of events you're on.
Yes. Which is why Pandy does not work in that field. Anyway, so we've come to everyone's top picks, and interestingly,
do we have three separate movies to talk about?
Oh, yeah. Three separate movies. So this is going to make the final tabulation very interesting indeed.
Crazy.
Because we are three very different people.
We are. As Dave has pointed out, I went to private school. So, so Dave, you commoner, tell me what's at the top of your list.
Yes, sir. If you don't mind, thank you for letting me speak, sir. my number one is Army of Darkness.
Right. Army of Darkness. Right. Evil Dead 3.
Yes.
Kind of, sort of. Go for it, yeah.
Yeah. I'm fully aware, as I said at the top of this podcast, I saw the Evil Dead films in the wrong order.
Right.
And it's something that me and Julian constantly clash about, because she has seen the Evil Dead films in the right order and will steadfastly say that the Evil Dead is the best one, and screw you. so we very much come towards it from different ends, but like, in a way, I mean, like, it's kind of not, I mean, it is a horror film, but it's not a horror film. It's more like a fantasy film.
Yeah.
for me, it's just a wonderful mix of genres. It's a fantasy, it's a comedy, it's a horror film. You know, it's got a bonkers, just this absolute arsehole of a man.
Yeah.
dumped in medieval times, having had enough of everyone's shit, kind of justifiably so, considering the days already had. You know,
he delivers in that movie. Listen up, you primitive screwheads.
Yeah.
It's one of the best ways to start a conversation.
So you're about in charge of two things around here, Jack and shit, and Jack is left hand.
All right, Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Ash in this is like, because this all takes place immediately after Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
So he's already had the shittiest couple of days. And now this has happened to him.
Yeah.
And now he's got to go off on a Lord of the Rings quest that he doesn't want to do. And, like, yeah, he's done with everything. All absolutely done. And, of course, he half-asses his way through trying to keep the magic spell.
Yeah, right.
Because he wasn't paying attention, because he doesn't want to do it. And to be honest with you, you know, if I was him, I probably would have forgotten the words as well.
Right, right. it's so weird. Like, it has as much in common with, like, Willow as it does with Evil Dead. You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So weird. Yeah, it's truly one of the weirdest sequels of all time. And with, I say that with all love. Truly an amazing movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can absolutely see why some Evil Dead fans don't like it, because if you watched Evil Dead and then watched Evil Dead 2, and then you get to Army of Darkness, you go, what the fuck is this?
Right, right. It's a crazy spectrum, those three films, for sure. And Bruce Campbell's only studio film as the main lead.
Yeah.
Wow. Hang on. Crazy. Was Evil Dead 2 not a studio film?
No, it was not.
Okay.
It was procured after. Yeah. And so weird, the Bridget Fonda cameo.
Right.
Yep.
You can call it a cameo. Does she have a line? I don't even think she has a line, does she?
No, I think she just sort of screams as the thing comes through the window.
Right, right. Jesus Christ. So weird, but yeah, fantastic.
What did she ever go on to do?
Can I just double check with them? Which ending do you prefer?
Now, the version I watched only had the unhappy apocalyptic ending.
Right.
So I had to look up on YouTube the alternates ending.
Okay.
I think for closure, I prefer the happier ending. But at the same time, it's the version that I watched is totally in keeping with just making Ash's life a misery. Which I think is very much also in keeping with Raimi's relationship with Bruce Campbell.
So. I love that version, that ending as well. It's like the idea that we might have had like a post-apocalyptic Evil Dead, like Raimi would have switched genres again.
Yeah.
But then like Mad Max with Deadites. He's just like, and like bearing in mind that it's sort of like, yeah, this, I suppose in terms of like the amount of time Ash has spent, like he's been like, this has all been happening during the course of like a week, maybe two.
Right, right.
He's just having the shittiest time.
He's handling it relatively well, though.
Yeah. Well,
look, I prefer the happy ending, which is shocking to hear coming out of my mouth. But
sure is.
Simply because it doesn't have the tease for the awesome movie that we never got.
I can understand.
You know what I mean? had he been able to make Evil Dead 4, you know, fight the future dead or whatever.
Bad Ash.
Yeah, yeah. But I probably definitely would be saying, oh yeah, there wouldn't be a happy ending, I guess.
Yeah.
There it would just be the ending, you know? It's upsetting to me that we never got that movie. Cause I just wanted more Bruce Campbell as Ash. And we got several years later, but not quite.
So I think the happier ending is kind of the canon ending, because that's how we get to Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the first time I saw it, it was the post-apocalyptic ending.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was just kind of like, beautiful. That's like the horror movie version of, like, you know, seeing the Statue of Liberty at the end of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, for sure.
As long as it's not the Tim Burton version.
Yeah.
Ape Lincoln? Is that one?
Oh, help me, Dr. Zayas.
And the fact that sort of basically the last third of this got wholesale this lifted for Oz the Great and Powerful. Right down to there being a book involved. I mean, the only difference is that Oz's book is a book of kind of magic tricks and illusions, and Ash's book is Science 101.
Right. But yeah, like the tiny little Ashes. You know, yeah. it's never ending fun, this movie.
Evil Ash. I mean, as someone who did a history degree, I just like the idea it's set in medieval Spain or medieval wherever. Because it's just like, oh no, not another log cabin. It's like, right. Oh no, not another log cabin. It's like, where does he meet a dreadnought? Down a well in a castle. Right. Wonderful. Right.
Yeah.
And of course,
in the words of Hall and Oates, I can go for that. Wait a second.
Ian, did you recognise who was playing King Arthur? You've seen him in a film that we've covered on Earth too.
King Arthur, did he say?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, I still don't know who that is.
It's Marcus Gilbert, who was Captain Eric von Stahlein in Sniggles.
Now, in fairness, he was wearing a metal mask in that film.
Yep.
As many Pulp Diction films we can bring in as possible. Biggles. And many more. Okay, because we've already covered... Well, because we already actually covered Darkman. And we've referred to the shadow. So,
yeah.
It's lovely stuff.
It's all going beautifully.
We should really pick that back up. Okie dokie. Anything more on Army of Darkness?
I've spoken quite enough. So if anybody else has an opinion, by all means.
That's my line, Dave. okie dokie. Dez, I know the answer, but for the benefit of the people listening, what is the top of your list?
The top of my list is Evil Dead 2, sometimes subtitled Dead by Dawn. For me, this is the greatest horror comedy of all time. I think it's perhaps the best performance by a single actor in a horror movie that I've ever seen.
Okay.
That's probably fair. I can't argue with it.
And by that I mean like Bruce Campbell is like in this movie, he's modern day Buster Keaton. It's it's an absolutely brilliant comedic performance. So he's delivering this comedic performance inside this very, you know, mean-spirited and nasty horror film, which in some aspects really is a remake of the of this film it is a sequel to. It's just a wild movie, and I just loved what Raimi did with it, just as far as creativity and doing his own idea brought to life, you know, solely by him, no studio interference. That would come directly after that in movies, But this was sort of like the last pure thing he did. And yeah, I love it unendingly. It's one of my, you know, very favorite films. It's probably cracking the top 10.
Wow. Okay. When you say original, Des, to me,
yeah,
it kind of smacked of Pee-wee's Playhouse, but Evil Dead.
But that would have been before. It,
yeah, predates Pee-wee's Playhouse.
So
how, Evil Dead 2 was 87.
Pee-wee's Playhouse was like 89, wasn't it?
No, I've specifically looked it up on Wikipedia.
Big
Adventure 85, Playhouse 86.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure came out in 1985?
Would Wikipedia lie, Des?
No, of course not. I'm just shocked. Holy shit. I mean, yeah, Wikipedia can lie, but I don't buy that. But yeah, that's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
I would not have placed that movie in that year.
My bigger point is that it is a kind of one-man Bruce Campbell show for the majority of the film, which
yes,
the original kind of wasn't.
Yeah.
And to that extent, I find it a bit gratuitous. And I mean, it's absolutely fine if, you know, and I understand, but again, if you, first of all, if you haven't seen the first film, it really doesn't matter. And if you have seen the first film, then you can see that it builds upon the first film and takes it in a totally different direction. It goes a lot bigger on, as you say, the Buster Keaton style comedy aspect.
Look, this isn't even a lie, but sometimes when I watch a movie that I find to be like a piece of shit, I will put on the scene of Bruce Campbell throwing himself around the kitchen. It's not even a joke.
Right.
It's like literal medicine for me.
Well, I will listen to Dread Media in a whole new light. I mean, I don't want to not give it its flowers. I mean, it was still in my top 10, but I think because I've kind of seen half of the film before in the first film and not necessarily digging the new direction, groovy word, it didn't quite come across the way that it clearly does to you. But what was interesting in terms of the kind of new dynamics is you got the people who owned the house coming back, plus the trucker helping repair the bridge and the girlfriend.
Right.
And so you've got a new element introduced.
Has anyone here seen Evil Dead the musical?
I haven't seen it. I've listened to the score, though.
Okay.
Really good.
Okay, well, that's more than I've done.
You probably find it on YouTube or somewhere. It's great. There's a song called What the Fuck Was That?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's great. It's great.
Yeah. Dave, have you chimed in on Evil Dead 2?
Not yet, no. So, yeah, I do really like it. I mean, I think I struggle to think of another actor who would be able to carry this film the way that Bruce Campbell carries it for a large tract of it.
Yeah.
While still kind of keeping it interesting and fresh and like, basically just beating the living crap out of himself.
yeah, definitely.
Like, he doesn't hold back. He throws himself into everything. A great swathe of this film is a war between a man and his hand.
Yeah.
Like, Bruce Campbell's left hand is his nemesis in this.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure Bruce Campbell wakes up sore a lot of days for stuff that he did making this movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, all of a sudden, his shoulder hurts him a lot. You know, like, just, he gave everything to this movie. And I feel like it's just so pure, you know, like Sam Raimi's, vision and only his vision and Bruce Campbell's performance going, you know, very few have gone farther, you know, than Bruce Campbell in this movie. And I love it for that.
And in terms of Ash, the character, like, this is the film where Ash, the character we know as Ash, arrives.
Yes, the birth of Ash, for sure.
Yeah. It's like there is the Ash from the Evil Dead, who, great performance, a great character, but sort of like, Ash wouldn't become Ash until Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, I suppose in The Evil Dead, he's Ashley, as his sister would call him. Whereas in Evil Dead 2, he is Ash.
Yeah, that's where he becomes kind of like the horror, like the icon of horror.
Yes.
In essence, the John McClane of zombies.
Oh, groovy. So, we move on to the final pick, which is mine, and the top of my list, the one Raimi film we haven't discussed as of yet, is Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Which builds upon everything that was good on Spider-Man the first and makes things a lot better. Whilst being simultaneously hugely depressing because you're watching the world absolutely shit on Peter Parker.
Yeah.
In every way possible. And it leads to, and again, I said this on the Spider-Man Flick Chart Forum because we had Donovan on. And he tells this story about how when he was watching it in the cinema, it was the scene where it was just announced that MJ was getting engaged to Jameson's son. And you have to zoom in on Peter's face. And then you've got Jameson going, Parker, take the pictures. And like some guy in the auditorium is like, dude, shut the fuck up. love that story. But it's a return to a film that was previously very successful, builds upon it, it feels the same, it moves things along. You've got another excellent villain in Alfred Molina's Doc Ock.
Oh, so good.
And, yeah. who wants to chime in? It's number two on Dez's list.
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is the best superhero movie, like, hands down.
It's right up there, definitely.
Yeah, it captures everything that you could, you know, anything that you could possibly say about Spider-Man is captured in this film. The heroism, the down on his luckness, right? He's poor, put upon Peter, you know, like that's just sort of like it's all there. And yet it's also got, I think, some of the best comic book action that's ever been on screen. And I had a little problem with Spider-Man in especially like some of the CGI where you're seeing like him crawl. Ugh, it looks bad. But like, there's even a moment in this one where Peter like crawls up a wall for like literally no reason other than to like test his powers. But really in my head, I'm like, Sam Raimi knows that CGI was bad. And he's doing this to show that he's figured it out.
Right.
I stand by that. Because I think he's a guy who's probably petty with himself. Does not like when things don't come out well, I'm sure. But, what a perfect superhero movie. Alfred Molina, my God. Like, the perfect actor to play this legitimately cornball comic character.
Yeah.
Like, I do vaguely remember, it's gonna be Dr. Octopus? You know, like, really? And then, oh, Alfred Molina. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you actually see it. It's like, holy shit. This guy is a masterpiece as Dr. Octopus.
The scene where he's in surgery to try and get the arms removed.
Yeah.
Pure Raimi, that scene.
Yeah. For sure. The train scene? Oh my God.
Yeah.
The train scene. Come on. One of the best scenes in all of superhero movies. Absolutely. Definitely, like, brings to mind what Superman Returns, the plane scene. God, how did they get that so right? And yet,
the only good thing about Superman Returns—it's
literally like the most beautiful 8 minutes of cinema, and then it's nestled in that movie.
And then the rest of Superman Returns happens.
yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's iconic for me as far as comic book movies go.
Dave?
I love Spider-Man 2. I do genuinely enjoy watching it. I think the reason I ranked Spider-Man above it by one place is because I was thinking about this yesterday as I was going over the list, and I was flip-flopping over which way around I was going to put them. And I think my take on it was that Spider-Man 2 has lots of great moments. Like, it's got some really good set pieces, like we've already mentioned, like the hospital scene, the train fight, and the bit the subway's trying to deliver the pizza.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Spidey nicked that man's pizzas. He didn't say nicked, yeah. He's from New York.
You're Finston Gump. But yeah, it's just, I think the thing that kind of like puts it slightly, I mean, it's a photo finish, don't get me wrong. But the thing that gives Spider-Man slightly the edge for me is the fact that I kind of prefer it as an overall story. There's bits in Spider-Man 2, which, again, like, I love Spider-Man 2, can't say this enough, but I find the kind of like, the bits with Harry being kind of all bitter and mean are a bit, I'm not a big fan of it. I know it's better being like Harry in the transition to becoming a villain.
Yeah.
But like, the whole bit where Harry at the start better be a bit more of a swaggering kind of rich guy douche than he used to be. And like, again, James Franco isn't great.
But it's also very much a Spider-Man comic book thing to have people in Peter Parker's life who hate Spider-Man but love Peter.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's partially important there too. But
yeah.
I mean, you just like the story better. I really thought you were going to say what puts it ahead was Macho Man Randy Savage. And if you're going to say that, that's not something I could argue. I'm with you on that. I mean,
Bonesaw's ready.
Bonesaw is ready.
But it really is only a hair's breadth between them.
Yeah.
They're
great. They're both legitimately great comic book movies, for sure.
Yeah. So it's only because the format of this show demands that I place one above the other. And on another day, it could have gone another way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how I sort of, like, felt about it at the time. So, yeah, I mean, like, obviously the action's fantastic. I mean, I think I tend to find Mary Jane less enjoyable in two. When she's kind of, like, yeah, in like the first one, I kind of just kind of prefer their dynamic and the fact that when she's kind of like the whole thing of she's all conflicted because she's engaged to John, but she really likes Spider-Man and doesn't know who he is and
yeah.
stuff. And
she's also a little whiny in this one. I don't think they did that character right in the in the script for this movie. I would agree with that for sure.
Yeah, so it's kind of like little things like that because that again just kind of like edge Spider-Man. Just by Spider-Man 2 for me. But for the longest time, I was very much of the opinion Spider-Man 2 was superior, but I think sort of like, having watched them both again recently, I kind of came away from it kind of thinking, sort of like, Spider-Man 2 has amazing set pieces, but the kind of connective thread the connective narrative thread for me wasn't quite as strong as the first one.
Right.
But that's literally the only difference for me.
And also, If you miss him, Spider-Man 2 does have a Willem Dafoe cameo.
Yes. Yep. Avenge me!
I don't know if that's a spoiler. The film is 20 years old at this point. Yeah. Cool. Okay, then.
Yeah.
Well.
Wow, look at that.
I have now tallied up the points, and I can tell...
This is going to be insane.
Tell you all what the master list is. And genuinely, you will not believe how close it is at the top. We have a joint first place. And we have a joint third place as well.
Wow.
Okay.
On 35 points, at the top of our list, jointly, is Spider-Man 2 and Darkman.
I knew it. I fucking knew it.
Joint third place on 33 points, so just 2 points behind, Army of Darkness and Spider-Man.
Wow.
And then at five on 30 points, so 3 beneath, is Evil Dead 2. And then 2 points below that at number 6 is A Simple Plan. And then just 1 point below that at number 7 is The Quick and the Dead. And then we tumble 3 points to The Evil Dead at number 8. And then a slight drop, 17 points at number 9 to Drag Me to Hell. And then again a fair drop to 11 points. Number 10 is The Gift. And then we have a three-way tie for 11th on 10 points, which is Spider-Man 3, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, and For the Love of the Game. And then penultimately, number 14 on 8 points, is Oz, the Great and Powerful, and the Atlas of our list, number 15 on, bless it, 3 points, is Crime Wave. So there is our master list of wow. Sam Raimi films.
That feels fair.
Yeah.
I don't think I could argue with that.
Good. Well, I'm all about fairness, Dave, as well, you know.
as you've demonstrated over the last couple of hours.
Well, notwithstanding that impudence, it's been a pleasure having both of you on. In terms of plugging things, Dave, anything to plug?
I exist.
What is the project that you're most closely associated with?
Yes.
I'm not putting you on the spot.
Come listen to Channel 37's Midnight Movie Show.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yep.
Why the tension?
I don't know.
So look forward.
Honestly, it's been so long since I've actually had to plug anything anywhere. I've basically completely forgotten how to do it.
Well, bear this way, I'm looking forward to that season because I may or may not have been contacted about it. And that's all I'm going to say. So,
well, you can't possibly bring anything worse than Ackerman.
Well, frequently. So, yeah, I've got that to look forward to. Dez, do you do anything?
Nah. Not really.
What episode of Dread? I mean, granted, it will take about a week to edit this, but roughly what number of Dread Media are you up to?
We're recording this on Saturday. Monday's episode is 862.
Good going.
Yeah, we're looking at popcorn and my top 5 favorite fake films within films.
Ooh, nice.
Good stuff.
And then music and shit. That's what I do on Dread Media. So come check it out if you like.
Yes.
Is one of them Mant?
Is one of them Mant?
For Matinee.
Yeah. No, you know what? It isn't. I don't even know. I think I got rid of my list. I can't even remember what it is off the top of my head. Yeah, it's not, you know what? I didn't even think of Mant. God, I would see, I mean, these things are all arbitrary anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just excuses for me to talk about things I like. Like there's a tie between Gandhi 2 and Conan the Librarian. I'll spoil that for you.
Gandhi 2?
Have you seen UHF?
Yes, ages ago.
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, they're both trailers of movies in UHF.
I need to rewatch UHF.
Gandhi is back and he's pissed. Awesome.
Lovely stuff.
I mean, really, the whole kind of making lists generally is kind of arbitrary, really, isn't it? I mean, like,
right, right.
Yeah, right. We've just spent 3 hours recording. Honestly.
Oh, so some days poking you with a stick is so much fun. Yeah.
That'd be a delight having you on, Dave.
Yeah, but...
I wonder why it's spent being 12 versions of this before I've had you on. Yeah. Anyway. Des, thank you for being exemplary again on your third appearance.
Thanks for having me. And despite everything Ian said, it was nice to pod meet you, Dave.
Likewise.
Lovely stuff. Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and until the next Flick Chart Forum, farewell.
Our email address is theshow@earth2.net. That's theshow@earth-2.net. Our voicemail line is 513-EARTH-20. That's 513-327-8420. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, we're at Earth_2. That's Earth_2. Please visit the website, www.earth2.net. That's www.earth-2.net. While you're there, on the left-hand side of the page, you'll see a link that says Forums. Click it and join the forums, please. If you enjoy what we're doing and would like to support Earth2.net and Earth2.net the show, there are several things you can do. First, make sure to tell your friends about Earth2.net and all of our podcasts. Second, go to iTunes to leave us positive feedback. Third, you can become a patron of the show by visiting patreon.com/earth_2. That's patreon.com/earth_2. And lastly, donations in any denomination can be made by heading over to paypal.me/earth2. That's paypal.me/earth2. There are no spaces, dashes, or underscores, just Earth and 2. Until next time, good night.